Let's start with one of the interesting topics. We have a nice compatibility layer we use for a number of things like package install and some other of the entry tools, which is the dependency farm part. But some interesting work in that area. It started when we added the new digest algorithms, SHARP 1.6 and 512. And when Avian added the new packages installation, we pretty soon received some bad reports about crashes on Spark. Well, looking into the details, it was quite funny. The implementations couldn't really work because they don't even go with pointer alignment. And I have no idea why no one has ever seen that netlist itself, because it's the same code for the university and storage. We do have a new check that the S.F. stuff actually the same. Some platforms, for example, just return random form or other random values when the buffer was not large enough or the cutoff the output and other things that don't make sense. And we do check how that comes through. And if we find such an insane implementation, we replace it with our own one. We have a new implementation which is just using an interesting hack to write to dev ladder to compute how long the output would be, and just use normal string formatting otherwise. Max, können wir das in anderen markieren? Vortrag. Erst mal eine.
Do we have any tomatoes?
Wie gesagt, ich meine mich nicht mehr noch mal. Ja.
Let's make some animal noises. Okay.
Jörg, you forgot to inform you about the launch of our rule for speakers.
I know.
That is to switch off.
Yes.
Right?
Cool. Okay.
It's okay for the audience to receive calls to.
Yes. I think that's the first time ever. But
no, we didn't tell you. It's okay. How should you know?
So. Yes. I forgot. We actually now have a version that is as good or as bad as the native printf, which still isn't that good in some situations. For example, all the surrounding versions or all this crappy packet cells operating system is kind of scary in that regard. But we can mostly deal with the effects of that. One important part is we dropped the complete built-in magic for any comma. It is always used as a in-place tool now, which makes dealing with the effects a lot saner. And we can do more intelligent things in the future with that. For example, we could more selectively one particle tests when we know what functionality the user actually wants. To allow using it for shared libraries, for example, it's important to also have a big version. So it's optional and possible to do that. There's an option to always get the replacement gearbox when we want PSD-like features, for example, the ability to reset the gearbox. There's no standard compiler way to do that. And there are a number of different hacks to mostly get the results, but they differ between the classic PSD implementations, the GNU implementations, the Solaris implementation. We don't want to deal with that, so just use our version. And of course, libmc compact is used as backend for use features, which is a very nice and easy way to say, we have a lot of compatibility stuff in the already, but we still need, for example, GNOME. So you can just have use features in GNOME, make file, and we'll include some of the necessary glue so the GNOME is provided using the libmc compact.
Uses these pieces.
Yes, and
so it depends on the operating system, whether you use a native one or
exactly. Basically, a good example is the getOpLong chain. Lots of programs need getOpLong, but many of them don't include the ability to get the supposedly authoritative copy from Google. What you get from use features is when it knows that it is needed, for example, because the user needs to get a page doesn't exist, or it's one of those operating systems that does have the header but has a completely broken or unrelated implementation, it puts in the pending compact and some more glue that we can remove still, and it makes it mostly transparent for the package. The kernel magic we apply, as I said, can be improved. Still need some patching for the package to include the right headers. We can do better using one of two approaches. If we are actually using GCC, we can just provide our replacement header as authoritative version, drop it into the include path, like we do with building three logging, and use include next to actually reference the possible system header. That's important when you want to add a few prototypes to a system header, for example, for ASP.NET. If we don't use GCC, we have to use a more hackish approach of directly including user include STD the page, for example, using the phone app. But that still works and would reduce modifications to the package to the newer version. Even better, it would allow us to drop lots of not very pretty if devs, for example, package. Right now, almost every header include is conditionalized, and you could just take that away, create the right headers all the time, the system doesn't have them, and pretend that there. Would make it easier and the framework itself more powerful. But as I said, that's still in the work. So, it's changed to a completely different Latin topic. A bit of changes in the infrastructure. First item is I removed the use tree, which basically is an entry list of direct piece, and whenever you create a package, a package or install a package, create all those directories in using a package, and most of them when you add them to. We do keep a single list of that file for the purpose of printplist, because printplist is using it to decide which directories should be removed using addrm and which are considered infrastructure parts. But that's all we need it for. The good side is it's removed like a 30 kilobyte per package. From metadata, it's something. The second part, which created some discussion, was the removal of the package tree prefix sample. For example, the package tree entry, I think, and one or two other things I forgot, where had special versions in package tools that installed directly over the base version in NetBSD. So if you installed package tools package install, it would replace the tools in user SPN. Same, I think, for entry and the other things. Which has some interesting results if you later try to remove that package. Because, oops, now you don't have any package installed. Of course, it has a disadvantage that it makes updates of those components more difficult. But I think the surprising part clearly outweighs the disadvantages. And this was actually triggered by some problems in bulk builds, because in the middle of the bulk build stopped working because all the components no longer existed. That's not nice. There was still a safeguard against Zolaris. Who knows what Zolaris is? Who wants to know what it was? Okay, good. Well, it basically was one of the reasons package source was created, and in a way, the anchor to get NetBSD like system usage on Solaris. After a long time, we got a new remake. Yes, finally. Lots of interesting bugs got fixed. Remake is quite a bit faster now. And hopefully this kind of difference between the main version and our will never happen again. It's not fun to try to find out which changes we have in package source and if there were some important changes. And which don't exist, for example, in the NetBSD version. One interesting case was check Roland added. If you use conditional expressions, make this a very restricted parser, and the parser doesn't really care about syntax errors at all in many situations. So you can avoid many expressions that don't make sense, which are still worked by make. Typically don't behave as you expect them to behave. Package install. Another area of active I'm missing Alice. Now I know why I was surprised that I was supposed to be here. Already mentioned the use entry removal, which also was pushed down to package install. Basically, package create no longer includes the entry flag with a package. Doesn't make sense to keep that. And package add itself will not complain about them, but just ignore them. It's the and extracts them, but it does not submit with them. It's possible that the rest of the support will be removed at a later time of our export pricing. The support for required scripts was removed. Required scripts are kind of like the install scripts with pre-install argument. No one could tell me if it was ever used. I actually asked some of the previous authors of package install, and they couldn't even give me an answer for previous reports, so it's just a download. There was an interesting memory leak in Dewey. Dewey is the algorithm we use to compare versions. So, for example, it's magic that says that alpha versions are older than beta versions are and older than releases, which are older than patch levels, and all this interesting magic related to that. From the very beginning, it was leaking a bit memory for each comparison done. We didn't care for all the series because it wasn't visible, but when the iteration changes for packages started to do a lot more comparisons, some part, and if you leak 100 bytes or so, a few 10,000 times in the program, yes, it's visible. And it wasn't easy to fix, actually. It took two iterations because originally it set a bug in itself due to the counting. It works better now, and we can do a lot more comparisons. So that's nice. One item I'll come back to the second presentation to is the logic package applied when trying to install a dependency that's currently not installed. Basically, you want to install, for example, the GNOME meetup package that finds out that, you need, what's the part for Swordfish. So, let's go find Swordfish. You have a huge binary repository. Yes, you have. There are two versions available. The current best version and the version MetaPack was originally built against. Which one did package app originally choose? The older version. I'm not sure if anyone ever complained, but I hit the problem with logic when I started to use normal package app to put in the dependencies, because if I didn't clean up the available packages before doing the required build, some of the dependencies changed, and I wanted to add both the dependency and the package to depend upon. And the later one was first on the command line. Sometimes it would fail because it would pull in the older version that still had the value of the download. This kind of magic is not very nice. I'm not even sure why it was used originally. Maybe someone from the past can answer that. Master and slave mode and package that is done. This is another of those items which look nice when you first go to package that, for example, for Dragonfly, originally needed a way to install a package to a change root installation without executing any programs in the change root for the purpose of building the release images. You don't really want to execute this binary simply because you are running a much older kernel that's missing some system is doing is the master is just extracting the package and to a temporary directory, and the slave is basically moving that to the right place. And between that, you can apply magic, but it's not really easy to do anything safely. The extract replace option is coming. In the plist of the package, you could flag this as okay, don't use the temporary directory, just go directly to the prefix. It's another of those things that supposedly were never really used because you had to do a manual work for it. And the goal was to make the extract replace the default. So it's not that problematic. The preserve option is done, which basically said if you have a file in the package which already exists in the file system, rename that file and don't worry about it. I'm still thinking about how to do that, but if we want to do it and if we really want to do it, what do we actually want to do with the files we are supposed to replace in here? Renaming them sounds nice, but you are leaving around some files you don't have any relation to, so it doesn't really make that much sense. What would be a better idea could be to just parse them up and put them not sure. Package create was changed to use archive to do direct creation of the harbors. One of the reasons to do work that was originally it used tar, and there's no way to get access tar or to override the ownership information in a package, and it's kind of important if you want to create a binary package as an unprivileged user. So one possible way to do that was to move to PUX and use the entry input feature. The other was to move directly to a library, and actually using the library was much cleaner, and I think it will allow some more interesting things in the future as well. What interesting problem that much later appeared was the Mono package has some very long symbolic links that are beyond the limits of the classic tar format. And NetList PUX and its various front ends don't deal very well with the symbols. Ironically, one of the complaints was that the new package creator is creating a format that doesn't understand. The older version of package creator that used tar would have created packages that tar doesn't understand either. So the problem in this case is PUX can create archives, can't be back. Difficult. Package info was also changed to use the archive, and recently also fetch to replace the external FTP process. One reason again was to simplify the code and fix some of the very interesting bugs in it. For example, the FTP IO magic tries to do some caching. If you access the same FTP site twice, it continues to use the same FTP process. The problem is the caching doesn't work very well if you want to use two directories from the same FTP site. In that case, it gets really confused. I'm not even sure if it correctly handles the process of dealing with two different application sites. Why would you want to use two direct rules on the same FTP site? In the past, we moved vulnerable packages out of the all directory into the vulnerable subdirectory on ftp.netlist.org. And with that package add, we'll stop finding those packages as dependencies of other things, which is problematic. Lots of users complain about that, and it's not very easy to fix. The other reason to use Lamarck, especially the package I wrote, was to make it faster. The calling overhead and the overhead of using of creating actual files is quite measurable. For example, when we create a package summary file, I did some measurements using a TabFS for the directory, the old package root extract tree, and the root binary package directory was inside a memory cache. It was twice as fast to not use an external program, simply because we have better control of what needs to be extracted. And the overhead of creating the external files and creating the external process is large enough that it is really measurable. In the head version, package is still using external parts to extract things and using external FTP IO. And with package install migration branch, both go away. It will still call external programs, of course, for the install scripts. That's one thing I don't have right now, which is creating of directory. I think I didn't change it yet because it's a non-trivial goal to get all the things directory conditions intermediate directories right and what's just simply called a binary program. But it's a simple matter of programming to fix that. Package delete, I'm not sure about what it's doing right now, but if you don't count those cases where we must call external programs because of the difficulty of the operation, if you don't count normal moving stuff, all should be fixed with the merge of the package and server integration branch. So basically, package install will be self-contained. There will be an option at some later point to use an external program, for example, to fetch files. That will be implemented much differently because we use a normal hyper architecture and not in the way it interacts right now. Basically, the changes are to get package add and the other tools more like a streaming architecture than the old approaches where extract the star modules directly. Extract it directly from the FTP side to this directory and move this over to this place and other things. Basically, the code itself is cleaner, it's easier to react to errors, and bootstrapping is also easier because we have much less components to deal with. And it gets faster. For packet. For package add for the current configuration that the file system where it would extract the data the Angular does. And using that makes it much simpler to use it. Sadly, the Glue guys decided to break the macro when you have macOS X and two new version builds, which means you build a single binary for different architectures. They could have simply declared this macro in a way that, depending on which architecture you currently compile for, it would just do the right thing. And no, they decided to just complain, oh, we don't know what to do. That's okay. At the moment, Digest is built using the old waterfall version. I'm still not sure how to correct the workarounds. I have to slap some waterfall buffers. Maybe they will actually. Much better. Tiger follows those newer, better hash functions that were started for. I think it was part of the hash function discussion of the European Union. It also has a much larger hash and actually created a buffer overflow in Digest. Didn't allocate enough space for it.
I think I interrupt this presentation when this important announcement. I was there and loved it in the
Do we have proof?
Where is the security camera for the
Ask him to call it from the German number. Okay, another interesting form of Tiger was when you have to empty file. The hash form was wrong because for reasons no one really understands, Tiger is defined to do some transformation on the empty input and not leak the initial well-known state of the state machine. I'm not sure why they did that. It doesn't make sense, but okay. A few more ifs in the code. Another interesting item was that the SHA-512 implementation had a bug NetBeans2.ml complained about. When they prepared the NetBeans2.4 release, as usual, they computed cryptographic sums of all the tarballs they put on the FTP site. And for some of those files, Digest computed different results than OpenSSL. Checking with a third implementation, they found, which is the normal NBS version, they found out, okay, it's a problem of Digest. And they laughed at that, but when I actually talked about some of the other things, I was asked to look at it. Yeah, well, what happened was, in one place, some conditionals were wrong if the last block to check of the file has exactly the size of a short fragment in the SHA-512 implementation. And for that specific case, just created robust results. It was kind of bad luck that we actually hit those cases. I'm not sure how long this bug would have been gone undetected otherwise. I mean, no one complained about it for like 3 years.
Are there or could there be regression tests on the various algorithms in Digest?
We have basically regression tests. Problem is, the kinds of bugs I've recently had to hunt down in the Digest algorithms, where is a specific length, and the specific lengths are hard to detect. I mean, you can do basic testing, try all length between 1 and 500 kilobytes. Yes, maybe we'll do that with ATF soon. It still takes some time to actually run it, but it wouldn't be too bad. other problem is, of course, you need to have another reference implementation. Given that most of the implementations are copied, but sometimes changed a bit, that's not too easy to provide. And of course, the third problem is things like misalignment are hard to detect automatically because, first of all, you need an architecture that actually traps in this case. You can sometimes ask Intel CPUs to do that, but you can't enable that all the time because lots of code on Intel being created by the compiler is written with the assumption you can just access misalignment memory and nothing better. It's sometimes even the most efficient code to use that, for example, in memory copy. You have to be somewhat interesting in not going over the board of a cache line, but otherwise it's not really that bad if you have a misaligned access. So all these things makes it kind of hard to do reliable regression tests for the implementation, and all those bugs slip through the existing tests. So work is welcome. We cleaned up our attic. We removed the GNOME 1.
We removed
bind 4. I'm still hoping to see bind 8 gone sooner than later. We removed MySQL 4.0. We also removed 4.1, but someone complained, wanted it back, and is supposed to maintain it now. We should do that with the tool. Yes, I know the kind of person would be. Blackdowns and Java and Speed support was removed, mostly because they had long and critical security issues. No one at Sun was to fix. We removed the SUSE 9.1 support. Firefox and Thunderbird on 5.9. We finally started to clean up the Python versions we have. I still want to see 1.5 added to the list, but okay. The monolithic XOR is gone. So at the moment, package source only supports the two versions of which is the native version of the operating system and monolithic XOR. In principle, I should really like it that we got rid of the monolithic XOR. There's one really, really important downside, and that's relevant of the XOR guys. Do you see the states? What would you imagine the meaning behind those states? No. At the beginning of last September, XPhone 1.1 was released. On 24th of that month, I reported a bug. They introduced just a 1 byte of overflow used by not checking read link correctly. 4 days later, after kicking some guys to please commit this patch upstream, finally went into the tree. With some help from a friend at SUSE who got a temporary CD item assigned, no other reaction from upstream until January 17th, when they finally released the new version due to some other exploitable issues in the like the Excel server 1.4, which was released with 30 or 40 showstopper bugs. Now after 8 months, they released a new version, and it still has most of those showstopper bugs. That's unlikely that they will ever get fixed. I don't understand. I mean, when you have a security issue in FTSD, at least we have a clear policy to document security issues and to release patches. And to release patches in a way that can easily apply to users. Why don't they do it? For many things, they don't even have things like a release badge. So, but the answer to this is, of course, because most Linux distributions don't care that much about the release either, but just kind of use versions all the time. I mean, Fedora Core is shipping the beta of Xbox Server 1.5. SUSE is using some older version, and we should push for proper releases. Do you actually give me a time limit?
No, we need to speed up a little.
Okay.
We need not to be short of time.
So,
if people start leaving, you should tell me. It comes to an end.
If you want me to say less, just say so. So, we saw some important changes in the bootstrap process. We got support to create nice, shiny, clicky macOS binary bootstrap package. So you get this thing with, yes? If you could do that for all packages, it would be nice. Or if you have some infrastructure to basically say, give me a Firefox package with all its dependencies to this location and hang it up.
That's the long-term idea.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
So is it a Mac application then?
It's a Mac dot package which runs in the Mac installer that you use for a normal software installation. So you double click it opens in that application. You authenticate, you choose the location. It's just like a real Mac software install. Yeah.
Can we have one for NetBSD?
The universal builds actually exposed an interesting bug in the KNFTP build. KNFTP has its own version of libedit, which is Christos' replacement for most of the readline functionality. MacOS X has its own version, but the native version doesn't have support for 64-bit PCI. So when we tried a new version build of TNFTP, due to some order issues, the native version was picked up and failed, of course, because this is for the new version, part of the new version. We got a proper XR replacement for Interix. Interix, and I've seen some other platforms who have incorrect XARC, basically when you call XARC with empty input, it should never call but it did. The bootstrap process was split into two parts. First, we bootstrap Bmake package admin, the register part of package create and package info. And based on that, we can use the model package source infrastructure to build the other important programs, which makes Bootstrap quite a bit less magic. We don't have this register Bootstrap events stuff anymore, and it works nice. I'm even considering whether can we use it even further to block package create which would be important if we ever get faster support for our packages and drop the model installation method. Because in that case, package create doesn't all this crept WinSH and also crept in KSH and just Solaris, if you haven't worked with Shell, yes, since open Solaris, they shipped with Bash. All those have bugs. And all those have bugs, we hit in one part of the extra source than the other.
Well, so that's the build process of PDK, PDK shell and the bootstrap. If you're using some Pro compiler, it takes the compiler because it tries to define a macro with the argument in the command line.
Yes, it's a problem. But I think we can fix it.
Yeah.
Going all this way, I should have done years and years and years ago. MCAP binary itself is gone, and Bootstrap has some new arguments to say, okay, I want a complex tarball, or I want a Mac binary package. We have the support for binary kits, and because they are useful for some applications. But the problem was having the second the second script to create them was interesting because they didn't agree on the arguments.
Exactly. So
yes. Just look when we went into the attic.
So maybe something like 2 months ago, I tried to bootstrap the current version of package source on Linux.
Yes.
And it failed, and you probably even then had some interchange about that. I think it was some code issues with FTP.
Yes.
Which also you had to put some changes in. Is that fixed by now?
I hope so.
Okay.
I haven't heard anything back. There is one issue. I'm not sure whether it's completely fixed. That's related to the FTP dependency. I'll come back to that a bit later. We are using similar default values in Bootstrap now. Basically, when you explicitly provide a prefix and it's not user package. Don't try to use slash var or slash var package for the package. It will just confuse other things and instead derive the default value from the prefix, which makes it quite easier to use a different installation and it also removes some of the load. When we check for the existence of a program like org, we used to get really confused if there's a directory named org or a subdirectory of the element path. So basically, when you have a directory user admin org, the code assumed you have a working org. Even if you don't really have. And of course, one of the items we could drop for Bootstrap is entry. There's some unrelated cleanup that still have to do. I think the FMLH magic in our role. And I hope we can actually completely remove the complete and compact build in Bootstrap itself. But then it's testing whether or not bmake can use standalone raw platforms. also can add on that. PAX is not a default tool in most tools anymore. So the only reason PAX is still part of the bootstrap is because package install depends on it. Package install won't depend on it any longer when the renovation branch is launched. After that, PAX itself can go from the default list. In fact, extract properly depend on what they are using. So when that part is done, FTP and PAX are not required for the bootstrap anymore. Package source itself shouldn't have any problems with case sensitive file systems anymore. There were some necessary repository moves to get to that point. For example, there is CVS. It's not very nice, this name, or case sensitive file system. And we had actually two or three cases where two packages had the same name on a case sensitive file system. X11, X11 was one of those cases. And those have been fixed using physical moves. The fetching and checking implementation had some cleanup done. For example, put between the checksum phase and the patch phase. Now share the same code to verify checksums and patches. When you have a patch, you want to do some magic because you don't want to include the nifty CVS ID in the digest because it changes after the loops. And it's easier if you do that only once. Checksum target itself can be called at any time. It will operate on whatever the main converter defines. It doesn't depend on the word directory anymore. We verify that all checksums are correct, and not only those will create also. So for example, if a package has a tiger hash in it, we now check that against disk files which we did before. There was a case where we failed badly. When you set this here explicitly, but you don't have any files in the package. This happens, for example, for meter packages. It would fail with an interesting main error due to the way we created that. No checksum and failover fetch don't interact with each other. Before, when you had a package that has disk files, but also has no checksum sets, failover fetch will fetch the files over and over and over again because the digest check will always fail because there is no thing to check against. The Postgres meter package was a good example for that. Now, no checksum really only suppresses checksum checked part of the build, but no longer interacts with fetching files. The last thing was when you use this sub here with single pyramid, package with no transfer would work. That was fixed as well. Package source worked faster in some cases. One interesting problem was local patch was always expanded. Or at least try to do it if it wasn't set. It was expanded in a way that subdirectories directly on the group was checked, which is bad if you are using Altima models. Interesting problem. Package install got a quick fix for Yui. So if you match a pattern and as usual normal pattern starts with a normal string, for example a package install dash and some logic. And we know if we have a package name, it can only match if it has a second match on this fixed part. Doing a quick check for that made a package admin audit on my own system 92% faster. The difference was before it needed 1.3 seconds, now it's directly there as a result. The Worker framework used to load its own cache multiple times, basically after every running event. That was fixed to only do that once and use the shell function to encapsulate that. For long command lines, for example, linking build programs, it's enough to 75%. But hopefully, the whole Worker framework will soon be a few thousand percent faster. It's supposed to be weak.
Yeah, we'll have a talk about it.
Yeah. And we saved a number of faults to compute things like lower options, class surface, and transmit some names to lower case and so on, just using variable substitutions. And even that is measurable for things like make one, just one make two programs. The check framework got some new bells and whistles. The shell library backend got a new version for all platforms, which can be used both cross compile and SQL, which can detect. You want to install a program or library linked against build and C. We have some open cases for that because it will, this one only works for testing usage, and some of the programs that fail with that are currently not using testing. You'll see some complaints about this soon, I guess. Worked differently by the RPOS before. One of those cases was Qt build, which always wanted to look back into its own build directory because the linkage was done in that way. And nowadays it's enabled by default and USD breakpoint for USD. The checkpoint framework was changed to not call package before, but to just use a plist generated and use those files, and that way we can also use it for Destiny. We skip the portability checks when we know a certain chance could will be run only by bash. We don't have to be portable. Check interpreter is part of package developers now. There are still a number of regressions in the bulk build, so bulk builds hopefully someone will try to fix them. It's tedious to do that all by myself. On the other hand, you get all these nice PRs from Hustle to worry about, so do what you find it easier. I normally prefer not to deal with PRs. Checking interpreter is fixed to deal with programs that use an interpreter that they just installed. So basically, the core package, for example, should be able to use its own interpreter. And for Destiny, it makes a difference because you have to look inside the Destiny prefix. home directory and actually check packages for web releases inside it. There are a lot of programs that are very noisy if they can't run to home or just run to home anyway. And this helps polluting to not pollute the home directory. For example, the KDE's UI compiler always wants to write to the home directory. Fucking annoying. Sorry. Dependency handling. This was changed quite a bit as well. It took a bit to get all the issues sorted out because it was really complicated as a program and so much magic and dependencies here and there. Even Johnny understood all the applications in that area. He's supposed to have written parts of that. So what we finally settled down with is first we check the version of package installed if it's new enough. If it's not new enough, don't just fail. If it's anything that is, I think, needs to be released, we try to install an update first. if we do that, we still record a build dependency on it, because that means the bundle itself can properly order dependencies and install the library package for package install before trying to build the package. When we later come to the normal dependency processing, we build a list of all dependencies, dependency type, and what package was used to fulfill the dependency. We actually manually prepared build and runtime dependencies to the PList before passing into package create and stopped using package create options for that. What it means for every dependency, the package has package info list what version was used for the build of the package. That's important if you have, for example, a static library, because otherwise you have no idea which version of the static library was used to build this package. And therefore, which version of the code is actually included. The output of the dependency phase is much shorter, but because it includes what kind of dependency it is it a bootstrap dependency, a dependency, or a normal dependency, it's also more useful. Doesn't so we find five instead of four in different locations and package DB, because some later targets will remove the later directory during this lost information. Package admin rebuild tree can be used to recompute the dependency tree and recreate all the required files from scratch. It will also contain if you have some package installed with dependencies that can't be resolved. This is basically helpful in the case of you remove the package with package db -f or so, and this dependency tree is no longer in the tree but more folders, and it tries to bundle it all back together. The dependency logic package will replace has been changed to use org, making it 20 times faster by putting the package in the request. Which will happen in the future is package path-d from the evaluation branch. Keeps the preserve state and install the important package. That means if you update a package that was automatically installed, it will keep the state. It will also mean that you can update the bootstrap components. It won't be able to just remove some of this package data, making it much safer for long operation and easier to update without having to rerun the bootstrap. This is a number of slides, just for small changes to the infrastructure. When you are making those work object here, it also will try to remove the category directory, so you don't end up with lots of empty directories after a while. We have a huge number of packages that want to include one or two files and repeaters on some conditions. And this was simplified using PDS class. To check if a file is binary or not was modified. Yes? Okay.
No. How many pages did it have?
That's 19 of 27. I just go over the class.
Okay, so this is
it's interesting when you use print plist with SQL packages, it doesn't skip older files, so you really get all the files. Which means for SQL packages, it gets trivial to build the plist. Of course, the emulation framework, the last item, simplified lots of things and made it not very nice to deal with them.
Yes?
Couldn't it matter that Microsoft doesn't understand Brazilian Portuguese?
Again.
Why does it matter that Microsoft doesn't understand Brazilian Portuguese? It sounds like
I'm not sure. I said we had 5 or 6 different times complaints that Bootstrap wasn't working on Linux. At least 3 times it was a user that was using a Brazilian Portuguese local. And GCC is generating different output based on whatever local you are in. And the logic that tried to extract the version number was confused by a different message format. Because the order didn't match to what we expected.
So did you try to reinvent the system, for instance?
It would have been the same issue, I guess. it works now because now we're actually doing the same thing we do when calling all the other programs. We set back a little bit to POSIX. The main reason to use an FTP list is now gone. You can provide a target, you can provide a list of comments to generate the key list. You can say this package doesn't have a key list, so no need to have empty files around anymore. Anthropology builds can be used a lot more often if only groups are needed, and you either use the default groups, or already have some set up, and your current user is part of those groups. We have a common logic to deal with Ruby gems, Python eggs. We have destial support for most of the world modules. We have CMake support. The last one is config files and a number of other cases. Expected pairs of arguments. Source file, destination file. When you forget one of those, or for example, use the versions where you also use permissions, if you forgot one of the arguments, it would fail rather mysteriously with CanShift than many. Roland tried hard to diagnose this case better. I think there's still a case open because David Holland complained about that recently, but it's better. We started to tag packages for GPL3 use.
You mean packages it's GPL3 now?
Yes. Those license tags are still commented out because we have to clearly define the rules for bulk and upload rules and change them to be less restricted than they are right now. At the moment, package is still considered restricted for upload just with a license set. And it's easy to change, but we have to be reasonably sure that the existing cases are not changed by that. Mm-hmm. That's why it's not done yet. We had a nice license war, whether or not license should be spelled with C and S, and I typically Alistair insisted that both spellings should be allowed. And, yes.
Can we spell redundancy also with an S? No, seriously.
I'm with a double D.
We also had a complaint from the ISP authors that we should follow the license of the package. Which is interesting because you can't really follow this license because this license is inconsistent with itself. It's GPL, which says you may not use a version that is older than 28 days effectively in all of IS3, which is weird, but...
Have you notified it? Have you notified it?
No. Given that most of the people around have the same attitude as we have, so on, go.
Yeah, it's more like everyone that make fun of themselves, but a combination that people will see how bad the GPL is.
I'm sure GPL will do that at some point when they are annoyed enough. Let's go to the last big item. We got a new feature we constantly forgot about, which is there's a limited support for cross compiling. We have a number of new variables for this, mostly provided by the infrastructure. MK-conf can override the national archive. particular package, we test the information down. When we have a package printed, we redirect it to the special cross area, which can be created, for example, using the SH distribution. Package install, image install, zem stuff are unprivileged and will go to that area. The tools we are now using for the tool are a mix of native versions, for example, GDK Package Config. Some of them are part of the Splinter's Edge toolchain, the compiler tools, for example. And in the future, we even may have some real cross-compiled tools we use, for example, the tool should ultimately be the version cross-compiled, because we want to run the tool depending on the target architecture. The compiler developers are doing quite a bit of magic. First of all, they ensure that the correct user tool is used. They ensure that the correct user is used. And of course, they have to transform all the graphs directly entries to check inside the cross-testing hierarchy and for the image, but also to create the correct entries for the final binary. The last thing could maybe be used to build packages for the build some packages without installing first. Consider rebuilding a major library, and you could use this approach to also build dependent libraries against a bit more without touching the full system first. Package app was changed to optionally override the measure used for its tests.
Yeah.